There's something when you load a typewriter with a sheet of paper, or just putting pen to paper, I'm absolutely sure that it activates a different part of your brain and it opens you up in a way that doesn't happen with emails.
Hello, I'm Hattie Crissell. This is In Writing, and that was my guest this week, Sean Usher. Sean is a slightly unconventional guest for this podcast because, although he is a writer, his primary achievement is as the driving force behind Letters of Note, which is a celebration of correspondence. I think a well-written letter is an art form, and there's nobody who spent more of their time studying and celebrating that art form than Sean has. He is really passionate about wonderful letters. Sean started the blog Letters of Note in 2009. It was a collection of noteworthy correspondence from the funny to the philosophical to the poignant. He went on to compile two big volumes of those letters, and more recently he has published a series of shorter books on different themes, including art, grief, and sex. In 2013, he also launched Letters Live, which is a huge theatrical event where performers read some of these letters in front of an audience. They have a really astonishingly good cast of actors and other interesting people doing the reading. At their latest event last month, those people included Tom York, Gillian Anderson, and Brian Cox. I know that because I was lucky enough to be there with my cousin Emma, and that's when it occurred to me that Sean would be a really good guest to talk about letter writing. I spoke to him last week. He was at home in Manchester, where he and his wife have a 9-week-old baby, so massive thank you to Sean for making the time to do this. We talked about the love letters that got him interested in this in the first place, the logistics of searching the world for wonderful correspondence, and some of the finest pieces of writing he's come across. Before we get started, this week's episode is sponsored by the stationery brand Papier, who truly believe in the value of putting pen to paper. Whether you're showing your love to friends and family or expressing your creativity, a little bit of paper can go a long way. This time of year is the perfect moment to send cards full of festive cheer, and Papier's collection includes a unique selection of note cards, writing paper, and Christmas cards, which can all be personalised to suit you. Or if you're looking for special gifts for the paper-loving people in your life, Papier have plenty of beautifully designed diaries, notebooks, and journals to choose from, which can all be personalised. And if you're planning to spruce up your Christmas table, look out for their cheery menus and place cards that will add a sense of occasion. Listeners of In Writing can receive 20% off their next order at papier.com, that's papier.com, using the code InWritingPodcast. And now, over to Sean.
I live in Manchester with my family. We've got a nice big house. We're very lucky that we've got this lovely big house that we couldn't have afforded in London. And we have a nice big room that was my eldest son's bedroom, is now my office. And this is where it all happens. I've got hundreds of books in here. The vast majority are collections of letters, which I'm always rifling through to find letters of note. But this is also where we sell the books as well, directly through my website. So this is like Letters of Note HQ in this particular room. And it's a nice big room. And I've got a window looking out onto our little garden. And there's a lovely big tree that doesn't belong to us. Also, there's a tram line just over there. And you might just hear every 15 minutes a tram going past. So if you hear something whirring, that's probably what it is. So I've got a nice view out onto the back garden of a big tree that's actually our neighbour's tree, but which hangs entirely over our garden, which is lovely when the tree is in full bloom. But it also means that I spend many hours, you know, at this time of year, clearing away leaves. So it's actually quite an annoying sight this time of year, but it's quite beautiful.
Does your desk look out over it?
It does, yeah. Yeah, so we've got two big, it's a really nice house. So we've got two big windows in this room and we have desks, me and my wife, because my wife helps me on the books. We have desks next to each other and we both have our own little window, well, big windows. So it's quite perfect.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it is.
What are you working on at the moment?
I am currently, so this is the first time, so I started Letters of Note in 2009 as a website, and then it became a book in 2013. And since then, I think I've had 14 Letters of Note books have come out. So I've always been busy either writing these books or compiling these books. Sorry, I'm still not sure what I am, a writer or a compiler or an editor. So I've spent all my time really working on those books and also Letters Live, which is the stage version of Letters of Note. It was kind of inspired by Letters of Note and another book about letter writing. So I've always been doing that. So I've just finished the new edition of the original book has just come out, and we've just had a huge Letters Live show at the Royal Albert Hall.
Which I was at.
Which was incredible.
Absolutely amazing.
I'm still kind of getting over that. It's a huge undertaking with that many people on stage and that many letters and copyright problems and all that kind of stuff. It's a massive job, especially in the Royal Albert Hall. So that's done. So now I feel like I can finally breathe and work on writing a podcast. I don't know if you've heard about podcasts, but I think they're going to be I think they're going to be quite successful. So I've for years now I've wanted to do a Letters of Note podcast, and this is the first time I've really had a spare moment to do it. So I've been spent the past few weeks writing the podcast. So that's, and I'm really thoroughly enjoying it. It's really different to what I've been doing since this whole thing began.
Yeah.
It's very different kind of writing.
I was going to ask, and you've just touched on this yourself, but you are a writer and you write these beautiful introductions to the letters and to the books, and you're also an editor and a researcher, and you know the logistical stuff that you must have to do to get Letters Live up and running. I'm sure that there's a team of you, but you know, you are an all-round I don't know what the word is, a sort of action hero of the Letters Live genre.
Wow.
Letters of Note genre. So but how do you think of yourself? Do you think of yourself as a writer primarily, or?
No, I don't. And I find myself, I have so many insecurities about what I do. When I first began this, and it all happened by accident. Well, not accident, that's the wrong word. None of this was planned. Me and my wife, just to go back to the beginning, I fell in love with my wife by letter. This was in 2001. We started working together, and then she moved away to Spain for 10 months as part of her university course. So we decided to keep in touch by letter. So that's when letter writing clicked for me. It wasn't something I'd really done before.
And that was, letters. You weren't emailing each other.
No, letters. At this point, 2001, I wasn't really writing emails to people. I'm not sure what I think I had a Hotmail email address. Things were pretty bad. it was a conscious decision. We thought it'd be fun to write actual letters to each other. And that's not to say that we didn't call each other. And I think even at this point, we weren't really texting much. But primarily, we were writing to each other. And that's when I fell in love, well, with my wife. She's now my wife. And with letter writing as well. And that just slowly grew over the next few years. And then 2009, I needed a creative outlet. I was in a job I really didn't enjoy. It was a sales job, like telesales, the worst, for me anyway. So in my spare time in the evenings, I started Letters of Note, and I just became obsessed with letters and the stories they tell. And I found it incredibly satisfying trying to find letters that do tell these stories in an exciting way, in a gripping way. And I thought I couldn't find a website that kind of showcased this kind of thing. So I kind of just filled a gap that was there. And it took off really, really quickly. So at that point, it was quite easy to classify myself. I was a blogger.
Right.
That was in the days when blogs existed and thrived. And, you know, there wasn't social media really, apart from MySpace, which doesn't really count So I was I was a blogger, and then 2013 the first book came out, and I didn't know what to call myself, and I remember I just thought it was quite funny, and I thought it was quite apt. I called myself a curator of correspondence, which I still think is quite nice.
Yeah, that is. Yeah,
I think it works. And then I got an email from someone, and she said to me, please, she said, I love what you do, but please, please don't call yourself a curator, because an actual curator, excuse me, a curator is a profession, that's a professional role. People train to be curators, you know, they spend years training for that job. So you shouldn't call yourself that. And I took it quite hard. And oh. I was very sensitive at the time. And I stopped it. I stopped calling myself a curator. And then I thought, what am I? You know, I didn't like being called a blogger. It felt a bit cheap at that point. I didn't feel like a writer. Because although I do write these introductions to the letters, I see myself more... I've always pictured myself, you know, when you go around an art gallery or a museum and you see the little plaques beneath the works of art that give you some information about what you're looking at. That's how I kind of see my job. But I don't know what that is. And I don't think I'm an editor. I have an editor and I know what an editor does, and it's not what I do. The closest thing that comes to my job, I think, is a compiler. I don't like the word compiler.
No, it's not as nice as curator. I think let's just go back to curator and
do you think?
You know, that woman's just going to have to live with it. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's too late. But compiler, to me, compiler feels like someone who's just throwing stuff in a pile, you know, throwing stuff together.
Yeah.
And I don't think it does justice, although I really don't have a big head about this. I don't think it does justice to what I do. So to answer your question, I have no idea what I am. And it feels quite odd to be speaking to you on your lovely podcast about writing when I'm not really sure if I am a writer. But I do. My career is kind of collating other people's writing. So
yeah, I mean, I think I know what you mean, and this is a podcast where I speak to writers. So you are sort of slightly on the outer edge of that sort of, if there's a Venn diagram situation. But I think you are a great fit for this podcast because I'm really interested in different forms of writing. And I think, you know, letter writing is a really important one, and one that we don't actually talk about very much, and one that we certainly haven't talked about on this podcast. So you are absolutely a brilliant guest for In Writing.
That's nice. Thank you.
I wanted to ask how many, I mean, this is a ridiculous question, and I'm sure you don't know the answer, but if you had to make an estimate, how many letters do you think have kind of passed through your hands over the last, 12 years that you've been working on this?
It's 12 years. Oh my God. Tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands, which is, in the grand scheme of things, it's not even scratching the surface, you know. And it pains me to imagine all the letters that I will never see. you know, I can imagine there are millions upon millions of letters that I will never see that could go in books like the books that I make.
Yeah.
So that's it. I could think about that a lot. I think about all the dusty attics that are full of these amazing...
Full of magic.
Yeah, these gems.
And
these
treasure.
These portals into the past that I'm never gonna know about.
Yeah. I'm not usually one for a sort of quickfire round, but I have prepared some quickfire questions for you. Just off the top of your head, what is the oldest letter you think you've seen?
I don't know. There's a very funny, this isn't the oldest one actually, but it's a very old one. It's an ancient, it's from ancient China. I think it was 200 BC. They excavated this area in China a while ago, and they found all these documents that used to belong to the Dunhuang Bureau of Etiquette. And one of them is this form letter that people used to use as a template. And they used to use it to apologise for their drunken behaviour the night before official dues. And it's so, so funny. I think mainly because it's just funny to imagine that we haven't changed. You know, even back then, people were getting hammered and making fools of themselves to the point where they did it so often that there was a form letter within this bureau that people used to use. That's from ancient China. There's another one from, I think it's ancient Greece. It's been carved into rock, and it's a complaint letter. And it's a complaint letter about someone's shoddy handwork. And again, it's just amazing to think that back then people were writing complaint letters, but chiseling them into rock, you know, going to that kind of effort. These days, I do it myself. I tweet if I've had a bad train journey. I'll tweet train line.
That's the equivalent of chiseling it into rock now.
Exactly, which takes seconds. But back then, they actually, you know, found a rock and chiseled their complaint into it. So I love that kind of stuff.
And what is the most historically notable letter that you can think of?
To be honest, they're not the kind of letters that I put in these books or use at Letters Live. I think this letter from Birmingham Jail, that's Martin Luther King. I think that's one of the most historically significant letters. But I've tried to kind of steer clear of that stuff because it's been done already.
Yeah.
There are so many collections of letters already out there. I haven't kind of reinvented the wheel. But what I think I've done is try to find letters that haven't been celebrated before and kind of avoided the letters we already know and kind of admire.
Yeah. And what about the funniest?
There's so many. We do these Letters Live shows, and what we're always looking for is the crowd pleasers. It's the letters that, you know, just make the audience cry with laughter. I can't remember what we used at Royal Albert Hall. I think did we use that complaint letter to Richard Branson?
Yes.
So it's letters like that, which has been called the greatest complaint letter ever written. And I don't disagree. It was written by a guy called Oliver Beale after he'd had a Virgin Airways flight, and it's a very long letter, included in which are photographs of the meal he kind of suffered throughout this long throughout this long flight. And it's just the funniest thing, but it really comes to life when you put it on stage and you get someone, I think it was Benedict Cumberbatch that read it at the Albert Hall, and when you put it in his hands and put him on the stage in the Albert Hall, it just really comes to life, and there's nothing funnier. So that's one of my funniest. There's John Cheever, the novelist John Cheever, wrote to someone. He adopted a cat from one of his friends, and the cat didn't like him, and to the point where John Cheever and this friend they fell out for years. They didn't speak because of the cat, and then years later, John Cheever writes to this old friend and just describes the cat, and it's incredibly funny. The cat kind of defecated in a tissue box as he had a cold, so he grabbed for a tissue and started wiping his face with it. That's a very funny one. There are so many.
Let's go back a little bit to the origins of letters of note and the letters that you exchanged with your now wife. What do you remember about that correspondence, and why it obviously led to a wonderful relationship with your wife, but it also led you to your wonderful relationship with correspondence. So what was it about those letters and how did you approach them?
I think a large part of it was just the novelty of writing to each other. That felt special. Just to say also, the letters that we wrote to each other, at least on my part, I won't speak for my wife, I would never put them in a book. I think they're not particularly interesting to anyone outside of our relationship, and they're not particularly well written. I mean, I remember drawing, they were illustrated, I used to draw, we both drew pictures to each other as well within the letters. People write good emails, and I love writing emails as well, sometimes, to specific people. But there's something when you load a typewriter with a sheet of paper, or just putting pen to paper, I'm absolutely sure that it activates a different part of your brain, and it opens you up in a way that doesn't happen with emails, a telegram. Not that anyone sends telegrams anymore. It's definitely not tweets and, you know, Facebook messages. And it forces, just the physical act of writing a letter forces you to slow down. And it forces you to take care. And it forces you to really think about what you're trying to say to the person on the other end of this correspondence. And that's certainly what happened with us. And we, because of that, I'm absolutely certain that we revealed things to each other that would have taken a lot longer had we not been writing letters. I'm sure we would have found out these things. Well, we definitely would have. But I think it would have taken years rather than weeks. So that was the most valuable part of it, I think. There was something really, really exciting about the letter landing on the doormat, you know, knowing when you came down in the morning that there was another letter. That you don't get that. It's not the same as get, you know, the ping of a notification from Gmail, you know. It just does not match. And just knowing that someone's taken the time to physically write and post a letter to you is so incredibly valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Not something that we actually experience that much anymore. Do you think that there's something about, you know, you said you revealed a lot in those letters. Do you think there's something about the medium that encourages people to be perhaps more honest or open up a bit more? I mean, it's nobody's looking at you when you're writing it, right? So it's kind of, it's a moment of maybe unguardedness.
It's definitely unguarded. It's the best way to learn about someone's inner self, I think, because I can't think of another time when you'd put that down in writing, unless you're writing a memoir. But I think for the average person, that's the time when you really can open up.
So you crowdfunded the first collection of letters, which was published in 2013, but then it did become an international bestseller. I wondered whether you crowdfunded it for a reason or whether it didn't occur to you to try and find a publisher for it in the sort of conventional way. Were you surprised by how successful it went on to be?
The website became quite popular really quite quickly, actually, ironically because of Twitter. It was tweeted by someone with a lot of followers and then it just snowballed. And I had literally millions of people visiting the website each month, which made me think, and very early on as this happened, I was getting contacted by a lot of agents and publishers, very keen for me to do a book with them. And this was the big publishing houses. But it felt too early to me, and I just knew that something quite amazing was happening with Letters of Note, and I'm quite proud of the fact that I didn't, you know, jump on one of these offers, because I could have really easily. So I waited, and I, you know, politely declined and said, let's speak about this in future. And then I heard about Unbound, which are, I think, the world's first crowdfunding publishers. So rather than Kickstarter, I could have crowdfunded the book on Kickstarter, but then at the end of that process, I would simply have a lot of money and no book. I'd have to make the book. With Unbound, you raise the money with them, and then they also do the publishing side of it. So it's a combination of Kickstarter, a traditional crowdfunding platform, and a publisher, which just felt ideal for me. And I heard about them, at the beginning of their life. I heard about them. It was an article in a I think it was The Bookseller, about Unbound. And I saw that and I thought, I already have my audience, you know? I already have millions of people coming to this website every month. I have people who have signed up to this newsletter. I don't really need kind of the huge marketing budget that, you know, a Penguin Random House can offer, because I already have them. They're captive. Why don't I try this? So I got in touch with them, and very quickly, they got back to me and said, we love what you do. And then we just went for it. So it crowdfunded. We raised, I forget the amount of money, but we raised the money incredibly quickly. The crowdfunding went really, really well. And then we teamed up with Canongate to do the trade edition. So there was the crowdfunded edition, the special edition, and then there was the trade edition that went into shops that was different. But in the back of all these books, you can see a list of all the people that subscribed. So it's a really lovely way to put a book out there. It also, and this was a blessing and a bit of a curse, to be perfectly honest, it put me in touch with all of these people who had subscribed to the book, who had prepaid for it, essentially, which meant I had this conversation going on with these people as the book was being made, which was really, really lovely. But I did four books with Unbound, and I loved it. I loved every moment of it. But the one thing that I couldn't get my head around, or that worked against me, was the pressure of knowing that everyone had already paid for the book, you know, and they were waiting for it.
Yeah.
And that paralyzed me quite often. I'm already terrible with deadlines and getting things finished. I mean, I'm really quite chronically bad with deadlines. So to have that added pressure as well, it took me a long time to realize that that was not helpful at all.
Do you think you're a perfectionist?
Yes, I think I am. I think I am. And I think that I always try to do everything myself for that reason. And then, you know, long down the road, I realise that I can't do everything myself. And then it's so late in the day that I've caused problems. You know, the moment when I finally admit to needing help is really late down the line. I think that what I've always been lucky with is that I've surrounded myself with people who really know what they're doing, and I've learned to trust the people who do surround me.
Yeah.
Because these books are the first letters of Notebook. I think there's 128 letters in it. I don't know if you've ever tried to clear, you know, a quote from a famous person to put in a book. It's really quite hard and time consuming. And I've got 128 letters in there, many of which need clearance.
Mm-hmm.
It's also got photos in there. There's pictures of the letters themselves where I can find them. So you have hundreds of permissions requests, you know. So even before I've, you know, hit the writing part of it, I'm trying to work out how to logistically get these books made. It's a massive undertaking. And at the beginning, I thought I could do it myself, which is absolutely insane.
Have there been any particular battles you've had to get permission to reproduce particular letters that, you know, were so worth it that you really continued with a difficult process? Does anything stand out?
Yeah, there was, I'd get sued to the end of the earth, but I could put out a big book that's full of letters that were, you know, that I've been refused permission for. One of which is a letter by Stephen King before he became famous. He was, he worked for a student newspaper. He had a column in it called the Garbage Truck, Stephen King's Garbage Truck. So he used to write a column every week or so. And one week he reprinted a letter that he'd written to a lady, a friend, about a snowstorm. And I'd heard about it because someone at the beginning of Letters of Note, 2010, I think it was, someone emailed me and said, "Have you heard about this letter that Stephen King once wrote about a snowstorm? I've heard it's just the best thing ever." So I spent the next, I think it was 6 months, searching for this letter. Couldn't find it online. I was asking. By this point, I had quite a few archivists and, you know, people in the know. I had a little network of people who helped me find letters. None of them had heard of it. And then I went onto a Stephen King forum and put out a call for this letter. And I eventually got hold of it. And it was just absolutely amazing. Just Stephen King describing his relationship to snowstorms and being locked in this house with this storm outside swelling around. And it's just the most incredible thing. But I've never been able to get it cleared.
He doesn't want it to be.
He doesn't want it. He doesn't want it reprinted. which is a massive, massive shame.
I would love to hear, in as much detail as you can be bothered to tell me, how the research process works for these books. I'm sure that the letters must come to you through lots of different pathways, but if you could just give me an overview of what some of those are, that would be really interesting.
Yeah. So in the beginning, it was literally me going to, so this is 2009. Well, it's before I started before that, but the website started then. So at that point, I was going to the library and looking through these old collections of letters, of which there were quite a few. The problem with those old collections of letters, if there is a problem, is that they're so heavily male dominated, you know, because, you know, it's a sad fact of reality that, and it still happens to this day, but the women's words weren't kind of valued as much as men's. And so 90% of the letters in these collections are men, and they are white American men more often than not. So that's where I started. It was a good starting point. And then museums, I went to the local museum in Manchester and spoke to them about letters. I went online. A lot of the good thing about the internet, because there are good things about the internet, is that you can access quite a few of these. So a lot of these letters are bought up by university archives, you know, usually in America. So you can go, you can have a look through their collections, not the actual letters themselves usually, but you can see what they've got. You can go on their websites and see a list of all the correspondence that are in each folder. So I started doing that and contacting archivists, who are the most amazing people on earth. They're so very helpful. So I was doing that. I was literally at the start, I was going onto Google and typing in amazing letter. It was that simple at the beginning, because, you know, my powder was fresh. So I did a lot of that. But then as the website became popular, it was just an influx of people suggesting stuff, which was great. But it also meant that a lot of my time was taken up just literally just responding to people. Because at that point, I felt like I had to respond to every single person kind of fully, you know. I realize now that that's just impossible, because it would preclude me from or stop me from doing my job. So that was great. I also, over the years, particularly back then when the website was really, really popular, people would send me a lot of letters written by their relatives. And it was very often these beautiful letters from kind of, you know, grandparents, grandpas who were in the war. They were soldiers in the war, and they wrote back to their grandma, wrote back to the family these amazing letters. And I was sent so many of these, all of which were lovely. And I can see how valuable they are to these people. But I saw so many of them that I couldn't really use them. So I had to spend quite a lot of time writing rejection emails to people who had sent me these incredibly personal letters to me. So that was a bit difficult. And it took me a while to get my head around that and realise that there was no other way. So just being completely honest with people. Yeah, so that's what I did. And since then, it's all of those avenues together, a lot of suggestions from people, a lot of books. My office is just absolutely full of books about letters, about letter writing, memoirs, because autobiographies used to be based upon people's letters, you know, because it was the best way to learn about someone's life. So old biographies generally have at least a couple of letters in. So I'd find myself literally buying a whole biography just because I thought there might be one letter in it, you know. So I have hundreds and hundreds of books that I've only looked at one page of, you know. I flicked through it. I became very good at flicking through a book and seeing kind of the form of a letter reprinted. Exactly. I became really good at that.
I mean, I imagine that when somebody famous dies and there's a kind of estate clearing process, or, you know, is it often the case that collections of these things come up at auction?
Yeah, that's another route that I use. Auction houses. It's an expensive habit because you're right. When people die, famous people die, even before they've died, sometimes when they're, you know, they need some money, they sell their, you know, their belongings. Oftentimes those belongings include letters. So I found a lot of, and again, you can go on these, there's a few really big auction houses, you know, there's Christie's, obviously, Sotheby's. There's one called Heritage Auctions and RR Auctions. I know them all. And you can go on their websites and just search through everything. Just type in letter into the search box. It's as simple as that. But I started buying them, you know, when which is a problem. I started actually buying them. You know, I've got a letter from Stanley Kubrick I bought. I've got a letter from Henry Miller. I've got these amazing letters, also letterheads. I've got a passion for stationery, so the paper on which these letters are written. Sometimes I'll find an amazing looking letter because of the letterhead, but the content of the letter itself isn't particularly noteworthy. So I started another project called Letterheady, which is that's still online, letterheady.com. You can just look at amazing, you know, beautifully designed or just historically interesting letterheads from people. So I've digitally removed the text of the letter itself, and you can just see these blank sheets of letterheads.
I love that.
So you can find a lot of that on auction houses, but yeah, they do sell a lot of letters on those auction houses. But again, you need to get clearance to use those letters either in a book or online, or to reprint them anywhere, or to use them on stage. So it's not a simple process, but it's another avenue.
Do you think there's ever an issue of it being intrusive to publish somebody's letters? I mean, for example, the love letters, you know, some of the letters that appear in your books are very, very personal and intimate, and perhaps the person who wrote them wouldn't have expected that at any point they were going to be published and read by the public. How do you think about that?
Yeah, that's something I wrestle with, and I have done since I started it. I think that comes down to permission. You know, I do get permission to use these letters, and in cases where those letter writers are no longer alive, then you have to kind of assess it on an individual basis. Even there are times when an estate has given me permission to use a letter, but I've still not used it because it didn't feel right. I don't see myself as, you know, WikiLeaks. I'm not just going to start publishing everything. So I do, on it, each letter, I kind of take a view on it.
Yeah.
But there are literally hundreds of letters that I haven't used, either that I couldn't have used or I could have used, but I thought better of. I'm not here to be kind of, you know, putting out scandalous letters that, you know, paint someone in a bad light or kind of reveal something that wouldn't have been agreeable had they been alive. I am quite sensitive to that.
Obviously, I come from a perspective of being interested in writers, and lots of your letter writers are or were also professional writers. You know, Sylvia Plath and James Baldwin and lots more. Do you think that, or do you find that the writers write the best letters, or does it not work that way? And are there any particular ones that you're very fond of?
So I think, first of all, it's hard to know because the only collections of letters that get published, they're usually famous people. You know, it is the writers, it's the professional writers, the novelists. They are the predominant force when it comes to collections of published letters. So it's hard to know. I suppose I'm very well placed to know just how good normal people write letters. And it's, you know, it's as you'd expect, some people write incredible letters. But and in fact, I've thought, and I'm still thinking about one day doing a volume of letters of note that is purely letters by non-famous people. I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm thinking of. But I think the problem, someone like Ernest Hemingway, for example, there's a great collection of his letters, but you could tell as you're reading his letters, you can tell he knows that his letters are going to be published. You know, he's not writing just for the recipient. often you can tell that he's writing for a bigger audience. And that's true of quite a lot of these novelists. I don't blame them. And it's like taking your work home, isn't it, I suppose, in a way. So it's nice to read letters that were that really were written for one person, because that is when you see the true person behind the letter. But it's hard to tell sometimes.
If it's not too stupid a question, what do you think the elements are that a good letter should include?
Well, it depends why you're writing the letter. There are so many different types of letter. In Victorian times, there were hundreds of letter writing guides published that would literally give you templates, and it would show you exactly how to write a letter, which kind of covers the letters such as inviting someone to a fancy ball. That's what those were for.
Well, I'd do that all the time, so that would be useful.
So do I. So back then, if you wanted to know how to write a letter, you just grabbed one of those guides and followed the rules, and it's literally like a template. I think if you're writing to someone, I think the key to writing a good letter is to forget that you're writing a letter, if that's even possible. Be conversational. There are definitely exceptions, many of which we've used at Letters Live, for example. But in my experience, the best letters are those which sound like they're just chats, that have been transcribed. Just really kind of guard down, not worrying about what the recipient's going to think of how you've written something or how you've spelt something. I think the letter is just a vessel for the message you're trying to get across, and it should be thought of as nothing more, because the moment you try to write a good letter, a letter that will knock the socks off its recipient, you put pressure on yourself and make the whole process more difficult. And it's just remind yourself that letter writing between friends should be a pleasurable experience and not a competition.
You've obviously I'm sure that you'd obviously received some wonderful letters from your wife, and I'm sure you had received wonderful letters before that as well. And I imagine that since you've been doing this project, people are more inclined to write you letters, whereas they might just send somebody else an email. So are there examples from your own life of specific letters you've written or received that you'll always remember?
Yes. Also, just to say that because of what I do, because I now am this letter expert, it puts off a lot of people from writing to me. And they'll tell me that.
Oh, the opposite effect.
Yeah, it can have that effect. So I get a lot of emails from people saying, they start with an apology. I apologize for this state of this email. And then they'll just send me this amazing email. So a lot of, and it puts off a lot of people. And I've been told the best letters I receive, and I received, was it a couple of weeks ago, a really big thick envelope arrived from America, and it was because I've got a PO box address on my website, and I think it's in one of the books as well, so people can write to me. And it was this big thick envelope full of letters from a school in America, and it was, at the front was a letter from the teacher, and she said, our class have been studying letter writing this past term, and they absolutely adore your books, and they all decided to write you a letter. So I think there's like 40 letters in this big envelope, all from these students, just asking me the most adorable questions about letter writing and how I started, and how is it possible to have a career like you've got? And just, I now have to respond to all these kids, which is slightly frustrating. But hearing from, and it happens quite often, hearing from teachers that they've used letters of note or the letters in these books to teach their kids either about letter writing itself or to teach them about, amazing moments in history through these letters. Because sometimes there are events that happened in the past that we only know about. We only know the details of because of letters that were written by those, in the front seat. So to know that these letters have been used through my books, that's the, you know, without a doubt, that's the most incredible letter to receive. Mm. I've also, I mean, I'm as bad as the next person, maybe not quite as bad, but I write far too many emails and not enough letters. But the, one of the joys, one of the upsides of making these books and going, you know, going to the effort of, you know, contacting permissions holders and copyright holders, sorry, and estates, is being put in touch with all these amazing people that either wrote the letters or, you know, are connected, somehow connected to the letters. So I have this ongoing correspondence with people, so many people, amazing people. And I've had some really lovely emails from people that I've kind of admired from afar before all this started, which is really, really lovely. So there's a letter by James Cameron, or, you know, the filmmaker James Cameron, who did so many amazing films. And there's a letter he wrote about Alien. And I remember thinking, because I really wanted it in the book, and I thought, how on earth am I going to get hold of James Cameron? You know, because he's working on these Avatar films constantly at the minute. I think this was the time when he'd travelled to the bottom of the Marianas Trench to get to the deepest point of the ocean, you know? I thought, how am I going to get hold of him? And how am I going to get a decision off him? But then I emailed his production company and I said, I'm trying to get hold of James Cameron. And they just gave me his email address. And I emailed him. I emailed him. And within half an hour, James Cameron had emailed back. And I started having a to and fro with James Cameron about this letter. And it's just the most amazing experience, which is, that's one of the upsides of emails, you know, the fact that you can have these really quick, rapidly evolving conversations with people.
It's funny because it was my cousin Emma who took me to Letters Live at the Royal Albert Hall, which she's a very good cousin. And she's a huge fan of the books. And I think leafs through them fairly frequently for, you know, inspiration or whatever. And she said, oh, but they make me sad, because she said there won't be anything like this from our generation. And, you know, it's nobody writes letters anymore. And there were all of these emails will just be lost. And I said, I don't know. I would like to think that that's not true. And that the fact that there are digital records of everything might, I don't know, in some ways mean that some things live longer. But what do you think? Do you think it's a dying art?
Yeah.
Oh no, Sean. That's very depressing.
Having said, but I think it's a slowly dying. I don't think there will always be people that write letters, and I do think there is a resurgence at the moment. It's quite hard for me to judge, because I'm in the position that I am, that I hear from a lot of people who are writing letters. So it's hard to know, you know, what the percentages of the general population, but people are definitely writing letters and getting letters from students about letter writing. Things like that prove to me that it's still happening. I do agree that as everything becomes digitized, we are at risk of losing our own history, you know? People aren't going to catalog tweets. I think there was an effort once, I don't know if it continued, all tweets were being catalogued in the US by a big archive. Was it National Archives, I think? They started doing that years ago. I think I wouldn't blame them if they gave up, considering how toxic Twitter has become. But we're not going to be... The good thing at the minute is that we're communicating more than ever. That's fantastic. You know, everyone's in touch, it seems. The bad thing is that everything's so shattered across all these different kind of communication methods, you know, Twitter, WhatsApp, email, that we're going to lose our history. I think it was Simon Garfield. His book about letter writing called To the Letter. It's a fantastic little book about the history of letter writing. And it came out on the same day as the first Letters of Note book. And we did this joint thing. And it was those two books that inspired Letters Live. Anyway, he said to me once that what the shame is that in the future we aren't going to be handing down you know, beautiful little boxes of old dusty letters. We're going to be, at best, we're going to be handing people passwords to our Gmail accounts or Twitter accounts, and God knows what they're going to find in there, you know, 10 years after we've passed away. Because even when you're alive, they're an absolute disaster, you know, disaster scene. So that's depressing. Although, again, but this is just famous people. Certain archives and universities have started buying up famous people's email accounts. So I think, again, it was Simon that told me this. There's a university, I think it's the Harry Ransom Center in Texas. You can go in there and you can log on to Salman Rushdie's email account. They basically bought his old emails, and you can go in there and just kind of browse through them.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, that's quite exciting though.
It is quite exciting, but that again, that's Salman Rushdie. You know, they're not going to be doing that for us. I don't know how famous you're going to become. Sorry, how rude. But yeah, you know, people have been fearing the death of the letter since the telephone was invented. You know, and then when the telegram was invented, people were panicking. It's a long running panic, but it still persists. And I will be through these books and the live events and the podcast when it eventually arrives. I'm going to be trying my best to kind of celebrate these letters and promote them, because there's nothing quite like them.
I was going to ask, you know, through this life's project of yours of bringing these letters to a wider audience, what is it that you really want to achieve? What are you striving towards?
There's no grand goal. It's just, I think it's really to share my excitement. I feel like a real dork sometimes, like particularly at the start of this. When I first started Letters of Note, I genuinely thought to myself, who on earth is going to read a blog about letters? I really felt like a bit of a nerd. But then it became really, really popular, and it gave me so much faith in people and their likes and dislikes, and just knowing that people shared this passion for something that's potentially on its way out really kind of gave me hope, and it still gives me hope. You know, just being at the Royal Albert Hall the other week and seeing 5,000 people in the audience going absolutely crazy, crying, laughing, you know, standing ovation at the end, all because people on stage were reading out letters. It's moments like that when I think maybe there is hope. So as long as that keeps happening, I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. But this, I mean, it's an absolute joy. If I would still be doing this, well, I would be doing the blog, even if it hadn't taken off. You know,
yeah.
I'd still need this outlet somewhere for this passion for letters.
I think it's about human connection, really, isn't it? And
totally.
There's a sort of shared humanity about it, which I think is what people are craving.
Yeah, it's connection. That's what it is. And to be disconnected from people is not healthy.
Do you think that reading all of these tens of thousands of letters has taught you anything about being a good writer?
Well, my life is played out through quotes from letters. You know, I'm always picking quotes from certain letters to try and help me through, you know, problems and stuff. It's taught me a lot. There's one quote about writing. This isn't actually from a letter, but this is the quote I go back to quite often, and it's by a guy called Gary Provost. Have you ever heard this?
No.
It starts, this sentence has five words. I just love it. Like, for me, good writing is all about rhythm. You know, it's about rhythm and flow. And I remember seeing this quote years and years ago and just absolutely falling in love with it. I'll read it out to you. I have this on my wall next to my computer. This sentence has five words. Here are five more words. Five-word sentences are fine, but several together become monotonous. Listen to what is happening. The writing is getting boring. The sound of it drones. It's like a stuck record. The ear demands some variety. Now listen. I vary the sentence length and I create music. music. The writing sings. It has a pleasant rhythm, a lilt, a harmony. I use short sentences, and I use sentences of medium length. And sometimes, when I'm certain the reader is rested, I will engage him with a sentence of considerable length, a sentence that burns with energy and builds with all the impetus of a crescendo, the roll of the drums, the crash of the cymbals, sounds that say, listen to this, it is important. I just love that.
That's
quote.
Wonderful. I love
Isn't
that
it?
Too, yeah.
It's so simple.
And looking at your work to date, what makes you feel the most proud?
It's the original book, Letters of Note, which still outsells everything I've ever done since, which is a lovely problem to have. In fact, it's not a problem. I'm really proud of that book. I think it's a beautiful book, and it's something I will always be proud of. And I'm proud. I was terrified, really terrified, finishing that book and having it sent to print, because I felt such a weight on my shoulders. I felt a huge responsibility to all the letter writers and their estates, all these people that had, without knowing who I was, given me permission to use their words in this book. I'm really, really proud of that. I think it did them all justice. But I'm also proud of Letters Live, you know? That show at the Albert Hall. That's the second show we've done at the Albert Hall. We've done some amazing shows. We went to the Calais refugee camp, the jungle, when that was, God, what year was that? We went there with the Good Chance Theatre, which is this little theatre set up within the refugee camp. And we, with the refugees, we put on a little, like a tiny Letters Live. And some of them read letters that they'd written. And we went there with Jude Law and all these amazing people. And that will always be up there as one of the most amazing moments of my life, things like that. And the Albert Hall, you know, seeing 5,000 people absolutely, you know, tied up in these letters and willing to spend money seeing these letters. And it's also, I wouldn't be as proud if, you know, Letters Live, we give most of the profits away to literacy charities. So there's always that really good feeling running through all of the events. So I'm really proud of those shows. The same with the audiobooks for the Letters of Note. Some of the profits go to the literacy charities, which, especially at the moment with the pandemic on, it's really, really important that they're supported. So basically, I'm proud of all of it, you know. I just wish I could find a name for the role.
Huge thanks to Sean for that lovely chat. I really recommend the Letters of Note books. I have bought several of the smaller themed books for friends, and I think they would make really lovely Christmas presents. You can find them in the In Writing shop at uk.bookshop.org/shop/in-writing. I'll put that in the show notes. I will also put in a link to Letterheady, which Sean mentioned. That's his letterhead themed blog, and it's also brilliant. If you feel inspired after listening to that to write some letters of your own, don't forget that this episode was sponsored by Papier, who sell beautiful letter writing paper and note card sets. You can shop now with 20% off at papier.com using the discount code InWritingPodcast. I'll be back next Friday with the penultimate episode of this series. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you then.